The test is in four parts, part 1, part 2, part 3, and part 4. Now look at part 1.
Part 1.
You will hear a man arranging to get a telephone connection. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 4. Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 4.
This is the ClearPoint Telephone Company customer service office. My name is Ms. Jones. How may I help you?
Yes, I'm moving and I'd like to arrange to have a phone line installed.
Of course. Let me get some information from you first. May I have your name, please?
It's Kramer, Harold Kramer.
And would you spell your last name for me, please?
K-R-A-M-E-R.
M-E-R. Got it. Okay, could I have the address where you'd like to have the telephone connected?
That would be number 58 Fulton Avenue, apartment 12.
Is that a business or a residence?
A residence. It's my new home address.
Then the type of phone service you want is residential, not business?
Yes, yes. It's for my home.
All right, fine. Now, let me get your employment information. Who is your current employer?
I work at the Wrightsville Medical Group.
Then your occupation is doctor?
No, I work for the doctors. I'm the office manager. Now listen and answer questions 5 to 10.
Okay, and could I have your work phone number?
It's 637-555-9014.
9014, great. Just one more thing. I need to know how long you've been at your current job.
I've been working there for quite a while now. Let me see. 9 years.
Okay, good. You've been there long enough, so I don't need to ask about any other work history. Now, in addition to our basic phone service, we have several special services available.
Could you explain them to me?
Most customers opt for unlimited long-distance service. It really saves you money if you make a lot of long-distance calls.
That sounds like a good idea.
Then I'll put you down for long-distance service. Another popular service is voicemail. Voicemail takes all your messages electronically, and all it takes is one simple phone call to retrieve them.
Voicemail. No, I don't think so. I have an answering machine to take my messages. It's old, but it still works fine.
We also provide internet service, if you're interested in that.
I am. Please put me down for internet as well as phone service.
Right. Okay, I think we're almost finished. I just need to schedule a time for the technician to go to your apartment and do the installation. Let me see. What about next Tuesday? Would that work for you?
No, not Tuesday. I'll be at a conference all day. Wednesday would work, though.
I'm afraid I won't have any technicians in your area on Wednesday. I could send someone on Friday.
That would be fine.
What time of day works best for you, morning or afternoon?
Morning would be best.
All right, then. It's on the schedule. Do you have any questions?
No, I don't think so.
Thank you for calling ClearPoint.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part 2.
Part 2.
You will hear a conversation between two students who will discuss a project they're working on together.
First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 17. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 17.
Hey, Jess. Glad you could make it. We've got a lot to discuss.
Hi, Matt. Yes, sorry I'm a bit late. I did bring all my notes with me.
Yes, me too. Where shall we start?
Well, I think it would be a good idea to clarify our objectives just one more time.
Yes, good idea. Okay, here we are. We need to record, photograph, and identify the plant species in 10 one-square-meter plots.
Does it say anything about where these plots should be and how they should be laid out?
Ah, here it is. It says that all the plots need to be no more than 10 meters apart.
And how do we choose them?
Ah, this is the fun part. I remember this. Here we are. Make a 1 meter square frame using bamboo sticks available from the department stores.
Yes, we've already done that.
I know, I'm just reading the whole section.
Okay.
One person stands roughly in the middle of the chosen area and throws the frame. The other person uses a tape to mark out the square where the frame landed and returns frame to thrower. The thrower then turns a few degrees on the spot and throws again. The thrower must turn slightly after each throw and vary the force of the throw until after the 10th throw they are pointing in almost the same direction as the first.
That sounds a bit complicated.
That's only because it's all in writing. It's just a simple throw, turn, throw, turn, throw, turn until we have 10 squares.
And I guess you want to do the throwing.
Well, if you don't mind. I'm sure you'll be more accurate at marking the squares.
Yes, I am sure I am, and I'm sure you've got a stronger throwing arm.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 18 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 18 to 20.
Okay, good. We've got that sorted. Now we need to decide where to go.
Yes, I've been thinking about that and I've brought the map.
Ah, well done. I forgot mine.
Now, I've identified 3 possible locations, but they've all got some disadvantages.
Okay, fire away.
Well, the area around this lowland marsh could be interesting. There'll be a lot of interesting water plants here.
Looks good, but what's the problem?
Mainly that it's already a designated nature reserve, and I think there's already been a lot of research done here.
Ah, I see. Well, I'd rather do something that's new and can be useful.
I agree. That's why I identified this area further west. See, here, behind the beach.
Oh, yes, I see. That area there, where it's flat, but quite high.
Exactly. If you look a bit further inland, you'll see that there are hills which will protect that area from strong north winds.
I see. Excellent. But what's the problem?
Just that it may not be very interesting. We know that the geology there is not conducive to a wide variety of plants.
I agree. So what's your last idea?
Well, I think this one is a bit of a winner, although I did want to show you the other two. Look up here, on the north coast.
Where?
See, this bay? Well, I know that there's been quite a lot of studies done here, but a bit further to the east, behind this headland. No one has ever looked at that. Well, I certainly couldn't see any studies.
That is interesting. and the plant life could be a bit different because of the shelter from the wind the headland provides.
Exactly.
Brilliant, Jessica. That's a great idea. We'll go there.
Thanks. Now all we have to decide is when is a good time.
Well...
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part three.
Part three.
You'll hear a conversation between Astrid and Henry about the lecture they've just heard.
First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 24. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 24.
Henry, don't you think Dr. Adams' lecture was really very good? He could talk about the telephone directory and make it interesting.
All his lectures are like that, Astrid. He's just one of those people. I wish we had him as our tutor.
I bet you that he is very demanding, though. Boris is in his tutorial group and agrees that he is brilliant, but he puts them under a lot of pressure.
But don't you think that's good?
Perhaps. Anyway, he's interesting and rather funny.
Did you take lots of notes in the lecture?
Yes, actually I did. In fact, several pages. I didn't think I had taken so many.
I was that busy listening to what he was being said that I didn't take many notes. Can I photocopy yours?
I don't think that's such a good idea. You won't be able to read my handwriting. And sometimes I write them in English, and sometimes in Arabic.
Oh, let's have a look. Wow, your notes are so neat. Well, there's not much in Arabic.
There is on this page.
Yes, there is. Dr. Adams would be pleased to see this, especially given what he's talking about.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 25 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 25 to 30.
Don't you keep careful notes?
Sometimes. It depends on the lecture. I don't think I'll forget Adams's lecture today, but some of the details will fade.
I type up everything afterwards, so you can have a copy then, and you can fill in anything I've missed. I'm not so good on the broader concepts. I'm better when it comes to detail.
Just what Adams was talking about.
Well, I am definitely a detail person. I need to have everything written down before I can get the concepts clear in my head.
And I am the complete opposite. I find all the detail clutters up my mind, and I get very frustrated, which was just what he was on about. He mentioned a book he had written.
He mentioned several.
The one on space and the individual.
Yes, called My Space. It's on the book list.
So it is. I think I'll get that out of the library, or get my own copy.
Did you get what he said about spatial awareness? I didn't really.
Yes, it was fascinating. I can't be as eloquent as Adams was, but I know several people who are frighteningly intelligent, but they have difficulty reading simple directions, even when getting to places that they know very well.
I find that difficult to understand. Everyone learns the way to walk to the shops and things like that.
You mean just the way people learn spelling? You know, people misspell words, make mistakes in countless areas of their lives, and going in the right direction is just the same. Remember what Adam said about the number of people who cannot tell left from right, north from south, and so on? Do you know which way is north?
It's that way.
You see, I couldn't have told you that.
Really?
I haven't a clue which way is which. That's why I'm always getting lost when I go out on my bike. And put me in a completely new place, and I am totally lost.
What about maps?
Oh, I'm hopeless at reading them.
But then you're brilliant at writing essays and getting all the ideas down in the right order, and I don't know where to start.
Again, just what Adams was talking about. What we need to do is combine our skills. You teach me to cope with detail, and I'll teach you how to string concepts together.
Okay, we can do that.
That is the end of part 3.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part 4.
Part 4.
You will hear part of a lecture about how adults and babies communicate. You should answer the questions as you listen because you will not hear the recording a second time.
First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
Hi, I'm Emma Bailey, and today I'm going to be talking baby talk. Hopefully, you'll find the subject interesting rather than infantile. I'd like to start by getting you to imagine a scenario. You're in an office or at a family gathering when a mother comes in with her young baby. Like everyone else, you want to see the mother and baby, and you probably want to talk to the baby. How do you do this? What kind of language do you use? Recent research has shown that adults all talk to babies in similar ways. They repeat phrases over and over again in a high-pitched sing-song voice with long vowel sounds. And if they ask questions, they exaggerate their intonation. Researchers have discovered that this kind of language, which they have called motherese, is used by adults all over the world when they talk to babies. And according to a new theory, motherese forms a kind of framework for the development of language in children. This baby talk, so the theory goes, itself originated as a response to another aspect of human evolution, walking upright. In contrast to other primates, humans give birth to babies that are relatively undeveloped. So, whereas a baby chimpanzee can hold on to its four-legged mother and ride along on her back shortly after birth, helpless human babies have to be held and carried everywhere by their upright mothers. Having to hold on to an infant constantly would have made it more difficult for the mother to gather food. In this situation, researchers suggest, human mothers began putting their babies down beside them while gathering food. To pacify an infant distressed by this separation, the mother would talk to her offspring and continue her search for food. This remote communication system could have marked the start of motherese. As mothers increasingly relied on their voices to control the emotions of their babies and later the actions of their mobile juveniles, words emerged from the jumble of sounds and became conventionalized across human communities, ultimately producing language. Not all anthropologists, however, accept the assumption that early human mothers put their children down when they were looking for food. They point out that even modern parents do not do this. Instead, they prefer to hold their babies in their arms or carry them around in slings. They suggest that early mothers probably made slings of some kind, both for ease of transportation and to keep their babies warm by holding them close to their bodies. If this was the case, they would not have needed to develop a way of comforting or controlling their babies from a distance. It's not only anthropologists, but also linguists who challenge this explanation for how language developed. They say that although the mother-ease theory may account for the development of speech, it does not explain the development of grammar. Nor, they say, does it explain how the sounds that mothers made acquired their meaning. Most experts believe that language is a relatively modern invention that appeared in the last 100,000 years or so. But if the latest theory is right, baby talk, and perhaps fully evolved language, was spoken much earlier than that. We know that humans were walking upright 1.5 million years ago. This means that mothers may have been putting their babies down at this time and communicating with them in mother-ease. We can be sure that this is not the end of the story, as anthropologists and linguists will continue to investigate the origins of this most human of abilities, language.
That is the end of part 4.
You now have half a minute.